Greetings and welcome to Hello Pine Knob, the official podcast for the Pine Knob Music Theater in Independence Township, Michigan. I'm your host, Gary Graff, back for a third season of documenting everything that goes on in one of the country's oldest and busiest amphitheaters. This week sees the return of some regular visitors and old friends to Pine Knob. First up is Carlos Santana, who's been playing at the venue since the 70s and is bringing his band back for what's become an annual visit on Tuesday, July 25th, with Counting Crows opening. We asked Carlos what we can expect from this year's Santana show, and here's what he told us.
We play life. You know, we play life yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Santana's been a part of this planet for a while now, and the people who identify with Santana from the 60s, Abraxas, the first three albums, and then later on in the 70s and 80s and 90s, so we play close to 3 hours, 2 hours and a half, so we get to touch on yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Sure. And, you know, you realize this year, it's 55 years this year since that first Santana album. You've gone so many places with the music. To you, what's been kind of the through line, you know, the thing that you feel has taken Santana from that point through to now?
It's like a river. It goes everywhere, but it retains the flow.
This year's Santana show also coincides with the 55th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival, where Santana made its name. Santana often includes film footage and sound effects from Woodstock in his shows, and he told us about the continuing connection he feels to the festival.
It's a spiritual frequency. It's a spiritual event, you know. When you think of Jesus walking around on the mountain, passing gluten-free bread and mercury-free fish, you know, people have made a Woodstock sort of like that kind of event, you know. It's out of time. Woodstock was not a commercial Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola event, you know. It was 3 days of unity, harmony, oneness to bring awareness to equality, fairness, and justice. Because the people at Woodstock, if you look at them, they're hippies who believe in something different than the corrupt corporations of religion and politicians. You know, we believe then and we believe now that peace is possible in our lifetime in this planet. That's why Woodstock is still relevant, because we still need peace.
Once again, Santana and Counting Crows play at 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 25th at Pine Knob. Later in the week, meanwhile, comes this year's 99.5 WYCD Hoedown, which has been going on in the metro area since 1983 and at Pine Knob since 2016. This year, it's a two-day event, Friday and Saturday, June 28th and 29th, headlined by Luke Bryan and featuring two different lineups of opening acts, as well as a second festival stage of up-and-coming performers. Hoedown has been going on in the metro area since 1983, featuring headliners such as Brad Paisley, Lady A, Derek Bentley, Brantley Gilbert, Rascal Flatts, Brooks and Dunn, and Tim McGraw. And of course, a special solo acoustic appearance by Garth Brooks in 2019 to commemorate the 30th anniversary of his first Hoedown appearance. To get ready for this year's Hoedown, we've gathered the gang from WYCD to share their memories, experiences, and tips, including making sure you're carrying enough bail money with you at the show. Joining us for this episode of Hello Pine Knob are Odyssey Vice President and Country Format Captain Tim Roberts and on-air personalities Rachel Hunter, Steve Grunwald, Rob Stone, and Holly Hutton. Tim, let's start with you. I remember I had just come here around 1983 when the first Hoedown happened downtown. And there were a lot of people scratching heads like, is Detroit really hosting this big country festival? What does Hoedown mean to the metro area?
I think it's a tradition that's kind of ingrained in everyone now. You know, thanks to Barry Martin and the people that founded this long ago. In 1983, they brought in, I believe it was Hank Williams Jr. and Mel Tillis and a couple other great country acts. And they just started the tradition. There was always sort of the, disbelief from the Nashville community that Detroit was a strong country market. They proved it wrong then, and we continue to prove it every year that what a strong country market. We've been as high as the number two country concert touring market in America in the last decade. And I think it's a credit to starting that tradition and then watching it spread to all the other venues, you know, with over 21 venues now doing country music. Maybe I'm even off on that. It could be more. But it's just incredible to see the fan base that was built and continues to be built and passed down through generations.
Okay. The Hoedown did make a move. 2016 is when it came to Pine Knob. What was behind that? How did it wind up coming out to Pine Knob?
There were a lot of factors. I think the Sugarland stage disaster in Indianapolis, which ironically happened the same day as Hoedown that year prior, and the super high winds came through Hoedown. It was very dangerous. And, you know, safety first for our fans. And I think that had a lot to do with it, because the cost of doing Hoedown, the insurance, the amount of police, and everything regarding safety became pretty much unmanageable when we had 500,000 people down there at a time. And it just got to be so big that it was pretty much uncontrollable. And some of you will recall on this call that they had to shut down downtown Detroit and not allow people getting off the freeway exits. And, you know, basically our insurance company was like, this is uninsurable. We can't do it. And I was just very worried about fan safety and, you know, don't want any tragedies happening at the venue. So we wanted to go to a safer event, and that's how it evolved. We went to Comerica Park for a few years. We tried it at Riverfront Park, and it worked well there, and actually at Comerica as well, but they built a parking garage in the space that we were doing it, and that's how it kind of ended up at Pine Knob.
Gary, for me, Hoedown at Hart Plaza in its prime was, you know, just to continue what Tim said, was unbelievable to look out. And as far as you could see, there was people. And it was crazy. And Tim is right. They had to shut the exits down. They would not allow any more people into the city. They would let them leave, but they blocked all the entrances getting into the city because it got to a safety concern. And I think that's when, you know, Tim and the rest of the management looked at things and said, listen, this is beyond everybody's control. It's just, it's so massive. But I will tell you, looking out over that stage was just, it's probably something I will never forget the rest of my life, to see that many people come down there. And one act I remember specifically was Aaron Lewis, not knowing how the crowd was going to take to him. It was his first, I guess, big concert coming out as a country artist. And he just went out with this steel guitar player, and he walked out and he looked at the crowd, and literally there's 500,000 people there. He lit a cigarette, took a few puffs, and then real calmly just started playing. And it was one of the coolest moments for me that, you know, out of all the Hoedowns that I'll never forget.
Yeah. And Aaron Lewis, of course, the lead singer of the hard rock band Staind. I'm not entirely sure that was a cigarette.
That he lit
So I have one that I want all of us to talk about, which I think that was the most memorable for everyone. So I'll save that one. But the very first Hoedown I did as a WYCD on-air staff member was in 2017, and it was my first interview with Rob. I don't think we had ever done an interview together before, and it was so joyful. It was with Midland. Do you remember this, Rob?
I don't.
Oh, actually. Let me tell you. So it was with Midland, and you know these three guys, they're nuts. They're absolutely nuts, and they're unhinged, and they're just, they're a crazy interview. And I asked them, like, which, what is it, chipmunk character they all identified with, because there was three of them, and the chipmunks are three. I don't know. It's a stupid question. But these guys all argued amongst themselves what character they both identify with. And Rob, who's a little bit more structured in his interviews, the panic look on your face gave me so much joy. And then I would just keep like throwing in a little blip or a blurb that would like restart their argument together. And it was so much fun for me. And like they were, I feel like, the most fun on stage. They were amazing. But that interview, I absolutely loved it. I was like, ha ha, like, this is a disaster, but like a good disaster. It was so fun.
I do remember this now. I think I blocked it out of my memory for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. But your face, you were like, well, I don't know what to do. And I was like, just let it happen.
Let them finish the interview by them.
They interviewed them.
They finished the interview by themselves. And we just sat back and watched.
Yeah, it was great. So that was like my first one. But can we all talk about Garth Brooks?
I mean, that's obviously, Garth is going to come up, and Rachel was the first one to raise her hand. So
when you ask, like I've been, 18 hoedowns now, the one that stands out, the moment I'll never, ever, ever forget was 2019, because we got to introduce Garth on stage, and we had billed it as a surprise guest. We didn't tell anybody in advance, you know, that Garth Brooks was going to be there.
But Rachel, it's because none of us knew.
We didn't even know. I didn't even know.
Tim kept it a secret. Do you remember all of us asking him?
Yeah, like, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I forgot about that we didn't know. But did we kind of know it?
We kind of knew.
We would guess. And then Tim's poker face. We're like, is it? I mean, we were all guessing, like, everybody under the sun. And Tim would never, his face wouldn't move. He wouldn't tell us. And it was just like awful and fun.
I'll never forget saying, like, give it up for Garth Brooks. And the crowd just went crazy. It was just, the reaction was wild. And Garth, I mean, out of all the people I've ever met in this industry, I think he is just the nicest, most kindest, wonderful human being. And he came up to me and just gave me this bear hug. And a photographer got a picture of he and I hugging. It's just one of my favorite moments ever in my career. In radio, was introducing him on stage at Hoedown that night. It was so cool. And the whole thing came to be, didn't he play Tim like the first one or something? And he said, if I ever make it big, like, I'll come back and play Hoedown again. There's a story behind why.
Well, we talked to him for many years, Gary, about will he ever come back? And every time we did an interview, and he said, well, maybe when my kids graduate high school, maybe when they're done, I'll come back and do it. And every time we interviewed him over the years, we would always ask him. And then finally he said, yeah, I'll come back. I'm going to come back and play it. But he didn't say when. So, you know, it was a long, long process for him to come back to do that.
Well, Tim, how did that come together? Did you have compromising pictures to finally bring Garth, you know, back to town? Or how did you put that together in 2019?
You know, I just kept reminding him that, you know, he had said that. I finally got him to say one time in an interview, and maybe Steve and Rachel will remember this, but he said, I'll do it when my kids get out of high school. So then I realized the 30th anniversary of him playing Hoedown on the third stage, which I'm often reminded of, was coming up. And I said, well, I called up his management. I go, this is the perfect opportunity. And they said, well, he could never do that because it'll blow his touring schedule and just create all kinds of problems. But if he could do it as a secret and not tell anybody, then he could surprise the crowd and it wouldn't affect any of that. And so we just teased it as a secret. I had to sign all kinds of NDA, non-disclosure agreement paperwork. And I stuck to my word. Only two people knew, Debbie Kenyon, our market manager, and me, and Garth's people. And we kept our word until literally 5 minutes before it was showtime. So I think Steve and Rachel finally figured it out at the very end there. And maybe Holly did too. I can't remember.
No, I was like, it couldn't. Like, I just thought it wouldn't.
I remember somebody guessed it right before.
I think we had... I think it was Austin Burke, actually, Holly, who we had interviewed And he was like,
he told
I think,
us.
He's like, I think I saw him backstage or something. And we were like, no way. We didn't even believe it. We thought he was messing with us.
Yeah, a prank. Like, we're like, Garth is going to be here. We're going to see him. I don't know. It was crazy. It was honestly, and I remember you guys going out too, Rachel, like, that was like the loudest crowd I have ever heard in my life. And it was just like, we were so excited. The energy was like through the roof. One of the greatest cons. And props to Tim for keeping a secret. Like, because we were bombarding him for at least a good 6 months at who it might be. And he never cracked. And I'm sure we guessed Garth Brooks at some point, and he never showed it on his face. It was amazing. It was
so fun. People were buying tickets to a show not knowing that they were going to see Garth live, you know? And I mean, the crowd was just, like you said, the reaction, I've never heard anything like it since.
And then he played music for us.
Yeah.
Like, it was went through the hits.
Hearing the audience sing along, you know?
The problem with that, though, now is that every time you bill a show with
a secret guest,
surprise guest, everyone thinks it's going to be Garth. It's hard to top that.
If it's not Garth Brooks, we don't want it.
It seems to me the nice thing about Hoedown, too, is, okay, that's a moment that's going to be hard to top and maybe never top. But Hoedown itself, as what it's established itself as since, you know, 1983, you don't need that, do you? I mean, it's its own, just Hoedown as a name.
Yes, you know, and I will say that for me, the best part about Hoedown, as the person booking the shows, has been really banking on new artists that later come full circle. And, you know, the list is enormous with Toby Keith and the Chicks, Miranda Lambert, Lady A, Eric Church, Little Big Town, on and on. They were acts that I believed in. And my music director, Holly, and the other people. And we just collaborated on trying to bet on these acts that we thought were going to become superstars. And the crazy thing was our betting average was very good. As you can look at the massive list of artists that were there, there's so many great artists that played it on the third stage, as I'm always reminded. Rascal Flatts always would, Gary would say, "Hey, thanks for letting us play the third stage, Tim." It was his running joke, but then it was full circle when they came and headlined. And the same is true for Luke Bryan, who's headlining this year. So it's a full circle moment for these artists that, you know, remember that as the first gig they ever played, including Garth, and then to come back and be a superstar and see the love and everybody knowing all your songs. And, you know, and WYCD as a radio station gets a lot of credit for breaking so many new acts.
And with that, you know, Gary, one of my favorites, I remember standing there watching Thomas Rhett, you know, go out and play with you, Tim. And it was, you know, it was really, really cool to see that. But, you know, like Tim said, over the years, all these great people that have come through, you know, this year will be our 19th Hoedown, Rachel. Yeah. And like Rascal Flatts and some of those great memories. I remember taking some of the Lions players, and I don't know if you guys remember this, I know Tim does, and bringing them there when Rascal Flatts played the Hoedown, and then all of us going on Gary LaVox's bus and Gary giving the Lions players a big bottle of tequila, encouraging them to chug it. And then I'm trying to corral, you know, 300-pound linemen and get them out of there and get them back home safe. And they're texting me the next morning. They're at Lions practice still drunk. You know,
we know why they didn't do well that year, Grunwald.
That was the 0-16.
0-16.
Yeah, this is explaining a lot. Yeah,
it was around that.
We just talked up on the air last week. We were doing Secret Celebrity. And it was Kevin Costner. And I'll never forget the year Kevin Costner was at Hoedown.
Yeah.
What?
He, Yes, I don't remember. Holly.
He played the stage. It was great.
So he's got this like country band. Now he never made it big like some of these other people did, but he played Hoedown with his band and he was real quiet and just kind of stood off to the side the whole time and didn't talk much, but like very good looking in person. And was that because Bob Seger was there?
Yeah, a bunch of them came down. But Gary, you got to ask Tim about one of my favorite moments at Hoedown. Is when Willie Nelson's bus door opened and Tim was going to go get on the bus and the smoke, youth would have thought the bus was on fire and the smoke rolling out of Willie's bus and Tim going up on the bus. And we didn't see him again for about an hour.
Now that actually was one of my favorite Hoedowns of all time. It was the Zac Brown Band, Willie Nelson, Kid Rock showed up and played. In fact, we still played the song. The collab song when they did Can't You See on the air. It was an incredible moment to just, it was like an MTV moment. I get on Willie's bus. It's me, Zac Brown, Willie Nelson, and Kid Rock. I'm like, this ought to be in a movie or something. And it was just a crazy moment for me. And the funny thing about it was after I came off the bus, I immediately got thrown out of my own Hoedown by a security guy. He goes, what are you doing standing here? I go, I was just talking to Willie Nelson 1 minute ago. He goes, you can't be around here. I go, this is my show. This is my show. I pay Willie Nelson. He's like, I don't care. Get the hell out of here. Or I'm going to have, you know, get the police. I go, well, you understand that I have every credential. And after you throw me out, I'm just going to walk right back in. So he threw me out. And, you know, we were in that backstage area by the Lincoln statue. And then I immediately walked back. And then I was like waving to the guy like 2 minutes later going, I'm back.
I think we should give Tim some props here, too, because he's probably the first person to come off of Willie Nelson's bus and have that much specific recall.
Yeah.
That he can go back to.
You know, and one more thing while we're talking about Tim, you know, his job over the years, Gary, I feel, and I know all of us can relate, but I don't think the public realizes how difficult it is to book all of these acts. And Holly knows a little bit as well, being the music director. But back in the day, it was a lot easier to get these artists than it is today. You know, when some of them are getting $2 to $3 million a show, it's really hard. You know, it was fun when the Hoedown was free. And then, you know, it eventually went to, you know, $10, $15, $25 for tickets. And nowadays, it's really hard to bring all of that much talent in, you know, where really it would cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. And you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it costs 20 times minimal of what it used to cost just to produce the show.
Sure. Let's talk about this year. And obviously, Luke Bryan, it's going to be great. Two nights this year, which is nice. That starts to feel like when Hoedown was a full weekend downtown. So we've got Luke coming. He's obviously going to be a big deal. But who else should people, when they come this year, you know, from what you guys have been listening to, who should people make sure they get a chance to hear in the lineup? Rob, you want to jump in first?
Actually, if I wanted to tell my full circle moment,
sure.
if I could, because you mentioned Kid Rock and Willie Nelson. I grew up here. I'm from, you know, north of Detroit, Elmont, Romeo area, where Kid Rock is from. So I remember going down to the Hoedown since I was a kid. And when I started in radio and I started in YCD, I think it was in 2011, I was doing weekends part-time, just hoping that there was going to be a spot to open up for a full-time gig. And then coming into the 2012 Hoedown, I started filling in for Coop, who was doing nights at the time. And I had applied for this position. And I didn't know if I was going to get it or not, but I was working and I was at the Hoedown. And the craziest moment to me, and thanks to Tim for this, was that Kid Rock showed up at that Hoedown, and he had been a hero of mine being from the same town. And that's all we listened to growing up was Kid Rock. So he shows up, he sings a song with Miranda Lambert, and I'm backstage. And I remember Chuck Edwards was there going, just go talk to him. Just go up to him. And I was like, I can't. He's like my hero, my idol. I can't do it. He's like, just go. I'm waiting, I'm looking. And then I see Tim goes up and is talking to him. I go, all right, this is my chance. At least I have someone I can go up to and say, hey, I know this guy. I'm with this guy. So I went up, I put my arm around Tim and I said, hey, what's up, Bobby? And he goes, hey, what's up, man? Shook his hand. And then Tim goes, hey, this is Rob Stone. He's going to be our new nighttime personality. So in the same moment, I found out I'm getting my dream job in radio and I'm meeting one of my all-time idols. So that was just an epic full circle moment for me. And it's something that that I'll never forget.
That's a nice one. That's a very nice one. So, you know, back to this year's bill, Holly, you lead off. Who should we make sure we get to hear?
So there's a ton that are my favorite. It's hard to pick a favorite, but I think the one that I get, I don't know, like I'm most connected to would be the best is Hunter Girl. Her songs, I don't know what it is. They make me cry, but she's got all this new music out that is great for summer. Like they're like summer fun songs. So I think Hunter Girl is going to be the one that I think people want to come and watch Hunter Girl. Plus, you know, she was on American Idol. Like she's amazing and she's the nicest person too. So
I think
that one I'm excited about.
I think that Hunter Girl is a little bit underrated, if you ask me. You know?
Really?
Don't you think she's underrated? Like people, like she's
like she needs to get more attention.
Yeah.
She's undiscovered.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like we had a moment with her when she came to our studio at Music Town. Ryan, you were there. I won't say anything. We all had tears in our eyes. I think Ryan just had like a piece of dirt in his eye or something. Like it was that. But like her performance just made me cry. And I'm like, now she's got these songs that'll make you cry, but then she's got these like summer jammy songs I think will be so much fun to hear live. So that's going to be my choice.
I was going to say Tyler Braden. You know, we talk about these artists that are newer artists and that someday, you know, work their way up from that third stage to that main stage. I think Tyler Braden is got one heck of a voice. And I think that he's going to be one of those guys that you see on the third stage or the second stage this year. And then a couple of years down the road, he's definitely going to be a main headliner.
Yeah. Rachel and I love Chase Matthew. We love Matt Stell
too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think those are people to watch as well. Wouldn't you agree, Tim?
Absolutely.
Right. So
Matt's already had a number one record and Chase he's just electric. People just love him. He puts on just an incredible show. He kind of reminds me of Chris Jansen in his early days. Just this incredible show that you're not expecting. And they were like, whoa, what was that? The energy is so high.
And then John Moore got a song with Jason Aldean that's so good. And then Annie Bosco as well is like very sultry. You really, we got the sultry in there, I think. What? I think there's a little something for everybody.
I had some sexy in there.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. I was trying to be PC about it. Yeah.
you all make your way around the venue pretty well, you know, during these hoedowns. What have been some of the craziest listener or fan interactions you've had?
I think for me and Tim can relate to this and Rachel as well, going back to Heart Plaza.
Oh my gosh.
I think that was when you would literally see about everything you could see in the city of Detroit. But I love the fact, Gary, that it brought everybody together, even people that, you know, because it was free, didn't get to experience a lot of country music and maybe find out what it's all about. And I really do think that we led the country with this. You know, where else could you get this? And Tim, wasn't it the biggest free country music festival in the world?
It absolutely was. And no one believed me when I would tell them that. And I even had pictures, you know, aerial pictures. I'm like, this is what it looks like. And then they were like, whoa, what? And I'm like, I've been telling you for 20 years that this is the biggest festival in America. Nobody believed me, but it was a fact.
One of the great memories from the from 1983, again, when nobody knew what this thing would be, was I had parked and I was walking from basically close to where Comerica Park is now. and you could hear them playing clear as the day, loud, all the way up to there, because they had the stage facing, you know, from the river back to the river, and then facing out to the rest of the city. And that, of course, changed, you know, very quickly. But I think that was almost, I almost felt like that was the deliberate way to tell Detroit country music had arrived in downtown Detroit.
It was a vibe. I remember carrying my backpack around, and I had a giant bottle of vodka in it, Gary.
You?
And Rachel and I would go around
to the vendor, to the lemonade vendor.
To the lemonade vendors and make vodka lemonades. The artists loved it. I had a mobile bar in my backpack, and the listeners who knew that would listen to us over the years knew I had vodka in my backpack. And literally, we would make drinks and have drinks with the listeners.
And the biggest one was Linda Lee, though.
Yeah.
She would show up with coolers and coolers and made us look at like amateurs.
So when, you know, like the Friday morning or whatever of a hoedown, do you lay staff bets on who's most likely to be carted out in a police car?
No, you know, we took it serious too, because this was our biggest event of the year. So, you know, we had a good time, but we didn't let it get out of hand, because it was, you know, it was fun. And thinking back over the years, you know, Josh Grayson coming out, you know, a local guy coming out
from the back of the crowd and working his way all the way through the middle of the crowd up to the stage.
You know, it was just something I will never forget and remember the rest of my life, because I don't think we will ever see something like that of that magnitude anywhere ever again. You know, it just would be millions and millions and millions of dollars to put something like that on again. You know,
it really did take a physical toll, too. I'll tell you, Gary, Friday morning, you were going, here we go. Are you ready? It was like preparing for battle, because you knew you had 3 20-hour days coming up. And it was a lot of work, a lot of work.
You know,
so, we had to keep it together.
Gary, one more quick favorite moment of mine. And Tim and I worked on this. I had tried for years and years to get fighter jets to come over for the national anthem. And I worked so hard on this. And every year I would tell Tim, I'm going to do it. Solfridge wouldn't do it. We couldn't get anybody to do it. And I contacted a base in Texas, and they brought up, and I finally got it approved. How I did this, I have no idea. I got them to fly these fighter jets up from Texas and coordinated it. And we had them do a flyover for the national anthem. And they flew over downtown Hoedown and over the river. And it was perfect. It was one of the best moments of my life to have these fighter jets come over in formation. And then those fighter pilots hung out and left their jets at Solfridge and hung out at Hoedown all weekend. And when they went back to Texas, they sent me an autographed picture of them flying over the mountains. And it was beautiful, of all the F-16s. And it had one of their patches in there. And I still speak to the colonel to this day from Texas. And he wrote to Grunwald, thanks for the hospitality at Hoedown and the, in parentheses, killer lemonade. and they had the best time ever. But that was one of my best memories of Hoedown, is those fighter jets coming over as the anthem right along the river. It was so cool. Such a great moment.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Steve. I was going to really talk about that as being almost my number one moment of all time. It was, we had to coordinate with them. I got on the phone with the colonel, and he was like, what time do you want us to be over Hoedown? He goes, I go, 6 o'clock. He goes, now, Tim, when you say 6 o'clock, it's not going to be 6 o'clock in 05 seconds or 5:59:50. It's going to be 6 o'clock exactly.
To the second.
So I asked Karen Newman, who sang the national anthem beautifully, by the way, and I said, how long does it take you to sing the national anthem? So it was like 2 minutes and 33 seconds or something. So Dr. Don, Rachel, and Grunwald were emceeing the stage at that moment. And I told those guys, I go, when I give you the signal, You know, that's when you got to bring out Karen and she's got to knock it out. It's got to be perfect. So literally I'm sitting there with my digital watch and going, okay, go, you know, bring her out. She starts singing and she got to the land of the free and I'm not seeing anything. And I'm going, oh, this is not going to work. And then she says, and the home, still nothing of the, and nothing. And all of a sudden I see these specks down by Lake St. Clair. And when she hit the notes on Brave, those jets were right dead overhead. It couldn't have been more perfect. I had tears in my eyes and Karen was crying and it was like magic beyond. It was like the ultimate moment to be an American at Hoedown in downtown Detroit with the building shaking and the F-16s flying overhead. It was so insane.
It was really cool. Then I had some friends out on the water that weekend and those F-16s buzzed all the boats on Lake St. Clair. It was really cool.
I love that they stayed and partied for all the weekend. Days.
All
like
weekend.
that is perfect. Like
they
what
left their fighter jets at Saltfridge. Like, they got a ride down. That was cool.
We parked the fighter jets. We'll be on down to Hoedown.
And I was like, whatever these guys want, all the beer, food, whatever they want, they get it.
Well, they clearly had the X-ray technology in their jets and they saw into Grunwald's backpack. So they knew what a good time it was going to be. Listen, everybody, this has been great. I think we've loaded everybody up for two big days of Hoedown coming up on Friday the 28th and Saturday the 29th out at Pine Knob, where Hoedown has been since 2016. I want to thank Tim Roberts, Steve, Rachel, Holly, Rob for being here, sharing your memories. They'll be out at Hoedown too. If Grunwald has a backpack on, you want to be his best friend that day.
Harry, I got a solo cup for you too.
I will be taking you up on that, even if I don't bring. I kind of have a like one of the big solo containers, the Ionic cup. But thank you all for being here. Thank everybody for listening to this episode of Hello Pine Knob. I'm your host Gary Graff, and we'll see you out on the lawn. Greetings and welcome to Hello Pine Knob, the official podcast for the Pine Knob Music Theater in Independence Township, Michigan. I'm your host, Gary Graff, back for a third season of documenting everything that goes on in one of the country's oldest and busiest amphitheaters. This week sees the return of some regular visitors and old friends to Pine Knob. First up is Carlos Santana, who's been playing at the venue since the 70s and is bringing his band back for what's become an annual visit on Tuesday, July 25th, with Counting Crows opening. We asked Carlos what we can expect from this year's Santana show, and here's what he told us.
We play life. You know, we play life yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Santana's been a part of this planet for a while now, and the people who identify with Santana from the 60s, Abraxas, the first three albums, and then later on in the 70s and 80s and 90s, so we play close to 3 hours, 2 hours and a half. So we get to touch on yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Sure. And, you know, you realize this year, it's 55 years this year since that first Santana album. You've gone so many places with the music. To you, what's been kind of the through line, you know, the thing that you feel has taken Santana from that point through to now?
It's like a river. It goes everywhere. But it retains the flow.
This year's Santana show also coincides with the 55th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival, where Santana made its name. Santana often includes film footage and sound effects from Woodstock in his shows, and he told us about the continuing connection he feels to the festival.
It's a spiritual frequency. It's a spiritual event, you know. When you think of Jesus walking around on the mountain, passing gluten-free bread and mercury-free fish, you know, people have made a Woodstock sort of like that kind of event, you know, it's out of time. Woodstock was not a commercial co Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola event. You know, it was 3 days of unity, harmony, oneness to bring awareness to equality, fairness, and justice. Because the people at Woodstock, if you look at them, they're hippies who believe in something different than the corrupt corporations of religion and politicians. You know, we believe then and we believe now that peace is possible in our lifetime in this planet. That's why Woodstock is still relevant, because we still need peace.
Once again, Santana and Counting Crows play at 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 25th at Pine Knob. Later in the week, meanwhile, comes this year's 99.5 WYCD Hoedown, which has been going on in the metro area since 1983 and at Pine Knob since 2016. This year, it's a two-day event, Friday and Saturday, June 28th and 29th, headlined by Luke Bryan and featuring two different lineups of opening acts, as well as a second festival stage of up-and-coming performers. Hoedown has been going on in the metro area since 1983, featuring headliners such as Brad Paisley, Lady A, Derek Bentley, Brantley Gilbert, Rascal Flatts, Brooks and Dunn, and Tim McGraw. And of course, a special solo acoustic appearance by Garth Brooks in 2019 to commemorate the 30th anniversary of his first Hoedown appearance. To get ready for this year's Hoedown, we've gathered the gang from WYCD to share their memories, experiences, and tips, including making sure you're carrying enough bail money with you at the show. Joining us for this episode of Hello Pine Knob are Odyssey Vice President and Country Format Captain Tim Roberts and on-air personalities Rachel Hunter, Steve Grunwald, Rob Stone, and Holly Hutton. Tim, let's start with you. I remember I had just come here around 1983 when the first Hoedown happened downtown. And there were a lot of people scratching heads like, is Detroit really hosting this big country festival? What does Hoedown mean to the metro area?
I think it's a tradition that's kind of ingrained in everyone now. You know, thanks to Barry Martin and the people that founded this long ago. In 1983, they brought in, I believe it was Hank Williams Jr. and Mel Tillis and a couple other great country acts. And they just started the tradition. There was always sort of the, disbelief from the Nashville community that Detroit was a strong country market. They proved it wrong then, and we continue to prove it every year that what a strong country market. We've been as high as the number two country concert touring market in America in the last decade. And I think it's a credit to starting that tradition and then watching it spread to all the other venues, you know, with over 21 venues now doing country music. Maybe I'm even off on that. It could be more. But it's just incredible to see the fan base that was built and continues to be built and passed down through generations.
Okay. The Hoedown did make a move. 2016 is when it came to Pine Knob. What was behind that? How did it wind up coming out to Pine Knob?
There were a lot of factors. I think the Sugarland stage disaster in Indianapolis, which ironically happened the same day as Hoedown that year prior, and the super high winds came through Hoedown. It was very dangerous. And, you know, safety first for our fans. And I think that had a lot to do with it, because the cost of doing Hoedown, the insurance, the amount of police, and everything regarding safety became pretty much unmanageable when we had 500,000 people down there at a time. And it just got to be so big that it was pretty much uncontrollable. And some of you will recall on this call that they had to shut down downtown Detroit and not allow people getting off the freeway exits. And, you know, basically our insurance company was like, this is uninsurable. We can't do it. And I was just very worried about fan safety. And, you know, don't want any tragedies happening at the venue. So we wanted to go to a safer event, and that's how it evolved. We went to Comerica Park for a few years. We tried it at Riverfront Park, and it worked well there. And actually at Comerica as well, but they built a parking garage in the space that we were doing it. And that's how it kind of ended up at Pine Knob.
Gary, for me, Hoedown at Hart Plaza in its prime was, you know, just to continue what Tim said, was unbelievable to look out. And as far as you could see, there was people. And it was crazy. And Tim is right. They had to shut the exits down. They would not allow any more people into the city. They would let them leave, but they blocked all the entrances getting into the city because it got to a safety concern. And I think that's when, you know, Tim and the rest of the management looked at things and said, listen, this is beyond everybody's control. It's just, it's so massive. But I will tell you, looking out over that stage was just, it's probably something I will never forget the rest of my life, to see that many people come down there. And one, you know, one act I remember specifically was Aaron Lewis, not knowing how the crowd was going to take to him. It was his first, I guess, big concert coming out as a country artist. And he just went out with this steel guitar player, and he walked out and he looked at the crowd, and literally there's 500,000 people there. He lit a cigarette, took a few puffs, and then real calmly just started playing. And it was one of the coolest moments for me that, you know, out of all the hoedowns that I'll never forget.
Yeah. And Aaron Lewis, of course, the lead singer of the hard rock band Staind. I'm not entirely sure that was a cigarette.
That he lit
that night. I do know that the thing the city of Detroit hated about losing about having the hoedown move out of the city itself was the dependable bail money they used to get from Grunwald and Rob Stone here. That was a huge hit on the city budgets. Wanted to go around and have everybody share their memories, because you all of you have been to so many hoedowns at this point. You've been on stage. You've contributed bail money to Independence Township as part of hoedown. Holly Hutton, why don't we start with you and, you know, your favorite hoedown memory?
So I have one that I want all of us to talk about, which I think that was the most memorable for everyone. So I'll save that one. But the very first hoedown I did as a WYCD on-air staff member was in 2017. And it was my first interview with Rob. I don't think we had ever done an interview together before. And it was so joyful. It was with Midland. Do you remember this, Rob?
I don't.
Let me tell you. So it was with Midland, and you know these three guys, they're nuts. They're absolutely nuts, and they're unhinged, and they're a crazy interview. And I asked them, chipmunk character they all identified with, because there was three of them and the chipmunks are three. I don't know. It's a stupid question. But these guys all argued amongst themselves what character they most identify with. And Rob, who's a little bit more structured in his interviews, the panic look on your face gave me so much joy. And then I would just keep like throwing in a little blip or a blurb that would like restart their argument together. And it was so much fun for me. And like, they were, I feel like, the most fun on stage. They were amazing. But that interview, I absolutely loved it. I was like, ha-ha, like, this is a disaster, but like a good disaster. It was so fun.
I do remember this now. I think I blocked it out of my memory for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. But your face, you were like, well, I don't know what to do. And I was like, just let it happen.
We let them finish the interview by them.
They interviewed themselves.
They finished the interview by themselves and we just sat back and watched.
Yeah, it was great. So that was like my first one. But can we all talk about Garth Brooks?
I mean, that's obviously, Garth is going to come up, and Rachel was the first one to raise her hand. So
when you ask, like I've been, 18 hoedowns now, the one that stands out, the moment I'll never, ever, ever forget was 2019, because we got to introduce Garth on stage and we had billed it as a surprise guest. We didn't tell anybody in advance, you know, that Garth Brooks was going to be there.
But Rachel, it's because none of us knew.
We didn't even know. I didn't even know.
Tim kept it a secret. Do you remember all of us asking him?
Yeah, like, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I forgot about that we didn't know. But did we kind of know?
We kind of knew.
We would guess. And then Tim's poker face. We're like, is it? I mean, we were all guessing, like, everybody under the sun. And Tim would never, face wouldn't move. He wouldn't tell us. And it was awful and fun.
I'll never forget saying, like, give it up for Garth Brooks, and the crowd just went crazy. It was just, the reaction was wild. And Garth, I mean, out of all the people I've ever met in this industry, I think he is just the nicest, most kindest, wonderful human being. And he came up to me and just gave me this bear hug, and a photographer got a picture of he and I hugging. It's just one of my favorite moments ever in my career in radio, was introducing him on stage at Hoedown that night. It was so cool. And the whole thing came to be, didn't he play Tim like the first one or something? And he said, if I ever make it big, like, I'll come back and play Hoedown again. There's a story behind why.
Well, we talked to him for many years, Gary, about will he ever come back? And every time we did an interview, and he said, well, maybe when my kids graduate high school, maybe when they're done, I'll come back and do it. And every time we interviewed him over the years, we would always ask him. And then finally he said, yeah, I'll come back. I'm going to come back and play it. But he didn't say when. So, you know, it was a long, long process for him to come back to do that.
Well, Tim, how did that come together? Did you have compromising pictures to finally bring Garth, you know, back to town? Or how did you put that together in 2019?
You know, I just kept reminding him that, you know, he had said that. I finally got him to say one time in an interview, and maybe Steve and Rachel will remember this, but he said, I'll do it when my kids get out of high school. So then I realized the 30th anniversary of him playing Hoedown on the third stage, which I'm often reminded of, was coming up. And I said, well, I called up his management. I go, this is the perfect opportunity. And they said, well, he could never do that because it'll blow his touring schedule and just create all kinds of problems. But if he could do it as a secret and not tell anybody, then he could surprise the crowd and it wouldn't affect any of that. And so we just teased it as a secret. I had to sign all kinds of NDA, non-disclosure agreement paperwork. And I stuck to my word. Only two people knew, Debbie Kenyon, our market manager, and me, and Garth's people. And we kept our word until literally 5 minutes before it was showtime. So I think Steve and Rachel finally figured it out at the very end there. And maybe Holly did too. I can't remember.
No, I was like, it couldn't. Like, I just thought it
I remember somebody guessed it right before.
I think we had... I think it was Austin Burke, actually, Holly, who we had interviewed. And he was like, I think I saw him backstage or something. And we were like, no way. We didn't even believe it. We thought he was messing with us.
A prank. Like, we're like, Garth is going to be here. We're going to see him. I don't know. It was crazy. It was honestly, and I remember you guys going out too, Rachel, like, that was like the loudest crowd I have ever heard in my
Same.
In my life. And it was just like, we were so excited. The energy was like through the roof. One of the greatest kinds. And props to Tim for keeping a secret. Like, because we were bombarding him for at least a good 6 months at who it might be. And he never cracked. And I'm sure we guessed Garth Brooks at some point, and he never showed it on his face. It was amazing.
So people were buying tickets to a show not knowing that they were going to see Garth live, you know? And I mean, the crowd was just, like you said, the reaction, I've never heard anything like it since.
And then he played music for us.
Yeah.
Like, it was went through the hits.
The audience sing along.
The problem with that, though, now is that every time you bill a show with a surprise guest, everyone thinks it's going to be Garth. It's hard to top that.
If it's not Garth Brooks, we don't want it.
It seems to me the nice thing about Hoedown, too, is, okay, that's a moment that's going to be hard to top and maybe never top. But Hoedown itself, as what it's established itself as since, you know, 1983, you don't need that, do you? I mean, it's its own, just Hoedown as a name.
Yes, you know, and I will say that for me, the best part about Hoedown as the person booking the shows has been really banking on new artists that later come full circle. And, you know, the list is enormous, with Toby Keith and the Chicks, Miranda Lambert, Lady A, Eric Church, Little Big Town, on and on. They were acts that I believed in, and my music director, Holly, and and the other people, and we just collaborated on trying to bet on these acts that we thought were going to become superstars. And the crazy thing was our batting average was very good. As you can look at the massive list of artists that were there, there's so many great artists that played it on the third stage, as I'm always reminded. Rascal Flatts always would, Gary would say, "Hey, thanks for letting us play the third stage, Tim." It was his running joke, but then it was full circle when they came and headlined. And the same is true for Luke Bryan, who's headlining this year. So it's a full circle moment for these artists that, you know, remember that as the first gig they ever played, including Garth, and then to come back and be a superstar and see the love and everybody knowing all your songs. And, you know, and WYCD as a radio station gets a lot of credit for breaking so many new acts.
And with that, you know, Gary, one of my favorites, I remember standing there watching Thomas Rhett, you know, go out and play with you, Tim. And it was, you know, it was really, really cool to see that. But, you know, like Tim said, over the years, all these great people that have come through, you know, this year will be our 19th hoedown, Rachel. Yeah. And like Rascal Flatts and some of those great memories. I remember taking some of the Lions players, and I don't know if you guys remember this. I know Tim does. And bringing them there when Rascal Flatts played the hoedown. And then all of us going on Gary LaVox's bus and Gary giving the Lions players a big bottle of tequila, encouraging them to chug it. And then I'm trying to corral, you know, 300-pound linemen and get them out of there and get them back home safe. And they're texting me the next morning. They're at Lions practice still drunk. You know,
now we know why they didn't do well that year, Grunwald.
That was the 0-16.
0-16.
Yeah. This is explaining a lot. Yeah.
it was around that.
We just talked up on the air last week. We were doing Secret Celebrity, and it was Kevin Costner. And I'll never forget the year Kevin Costner was at hoedown.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
he played the stage. It was great.
So he's got this like country band. Now he never made it big like some of these other people did, but he played hoedown with his band and he was real quiet and just kind of stood off to the side the whole time and didn't talk much, but like very good looking in person. And was that you? Bob Seger was there?
Yeah, too? A bunch of them came down. But Gary, you got to ask Tim about one of my favorite moments at hoedown. Is when Willie Nelson's bus door opened and Tim was going to go get on the bus and the smoke, youth would have thought the bus was on fire and the smoke rolling out of Willie's bus and Tim going up on the bus and we didn't see him again for about an hour.
Now that actually was one of my favorite hoedowns of all time. It was the Zac Brown Band, Willie Nelson, Kid Rock showed up and played. In fact, we still played the song, the collab song when they did Can't You See on the air. It was an incredible moment it was like an MTV moment. I get on Willie's bus. It's me, Zac Brown, Willie Nelson, and Kid Rock. I'm like, this ought to be in a movie or something. And it was just a crazy moment for me. And the funny thing about it was after I came off the bus, I immediately got thrown out of my own hoedown by a security guy. He goes, "What are you doing standing here?" I go, "I was just talking to Willie Nelson 1 minute ago." He goes, "You can't be around here." I go, "This is my show. This is my show. I pay Willie Nelson." He's like, "I don't care. Get the hell out of here or I'm going to have, you know, get the police." I go, "Well, you understand that I have every credential. And after you throw me out, I'm just going to walk right back in." So he threw me out. And, you know, we were in that backstage area by the Lincoln statue. And then I immediately walked back. And then I was like waving to the guy like 2 minutes later going, "I'm back."
I think we should give Tim some props here, too, because he's probably the first person to come off of Willie Nelson's bus and have that much specific recall.
Yeah,
that he can go back to.
You know, and one more thing while we're talking about Tim, you know, his job over the years, Gary, I feel, and I know all of us can relate, but I don't think the public realizes how difficult it is to book all of these acts. And Holly knows a little bit as well, being the music director. But back in the day, it was a lot easier to get these artists than it is today. You know, when some of them are getting $2 to $3 million a show, it's really hard. You know, it was fun when the Hoedown was free, and then, you know, it eventually went to, you know, $10, $15, $25 for tickets. And nowadays it's really hard to bring all of that much talent in, you know, where really it would cost millions and millions and millions of dollars, and you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it costs 20 times minimal of what it used to cost just to produce the show.
Greetings and welcome to Hello Pine Knob, the official podcast for the Pine Knob Music Theater in Independence Township, Michigan. I'm your host, Gary Graff, back for a third season of documenting everything that goes on in one of the country's oldest and busiest amphitheaters. This week sees the return of some regular visitors and old friends to Pine Knob. First up is Carlos Santana, who's been playing at the venue since the 70s and is bringing his band back for what's become an annual visit on Tuesday, July 25th, with Counting Crows opening. We asked Carlos what we can expect from this year's Santana show, and here's what he told us.
We play life. You know, we play life yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Santana's been a part of this planet for a while now, and the people who identify with Santana from the 60s, Abraxas, the first three albums, and then later on in the 70s and 80s and 90s, so we play close to 3 hours, 2 hours and a half, so we get to touch on yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Sure. And, you know, you realize this year, it's 55 years this year since that first Santana album. You've gone so many places with the music. To you, what's been kind of the through line, you know, the thing that you feel has taken Santana from that point through to now?
It's like a river. It goes everywhere, but it retains the flow.
This year's Santana show also coincides with the 55th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival, where Santana made its name. Santana often includes film footage and sound effects from Woodstock in his shows, and he told us about the continuing connection he feels to the festival.
It's a spiritual frequency. It's a spiritual event, you know. When you think of Jesus walking around on the mountain, passing gluten-free bread and mercury-free fish, you know, people have made a Woodstock sort of like that kind of event, you know, it's out of time. Woodstock was not a commercial Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola event, you know, it was 3 days of unity, harmony, oneness to bring awareness to equality, fairness, and justice. Because the people at Woodstock, if you look at them, they're hippies who believe in something different than the corrupt corporations of religion and politicians. You know, we believe then and we believe now that peace is possible in our lifetime in this planet. That's why Woodstock is still relevant, because we still need peace.
Once again, Santana and Counting Crows play at 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 25th at Pine Knob. Later in the week, meanwhile, comes this year's 99.5 WYCD Hoedown, which has been going on in the metro area since 1983 and at Pine Knob since 2016. This year, it's a two-day event, Friday and Saturday, June 28th and 29th, headlined by Luke Bryan and featuring two different lineups of opening acts, as well as a second festival stage of up-and-coming performers. Hoedown has been going on in the metro area since 1983, featuring headliners such as Brad Paisley, Lady A, Dierks Bentley, Brantley Gilbert, Rascal Flatts, Brooks and Dunn, and Tim McGraw. And of course, a special solo acoustic appearance by Garth Brooks in 2019 to commemorate the 30th anniversary of his first Hoedown appearance. To get ready for this year's Hoedown, we've gathered the gang from WYCD to share their memories, experiences, and tips, including making sure you're carrying enough bail money with you at the show. Joining us for this episode of Hello Pine Knob are Odyssey Vice President and Country Format Captain Tim Roberts and on-air personalities Rachel Hunter, Steve Grunwald, Rob Stone, and Holly Hutton. Tim, let's start with you. I remember I had just come here around 1983 when the first hoedown happened downtown. And there were a lot of people scratching heads like, is Detroit really hosting this big country festival? What does hoedown mean to the metro area?
I think it's a tradition that's kind of ingrained in everyone now. You know, thanks to Barry Martin and the people that founded this long ago. In 1983, they brought in, I believe it was Hank Williams Jr. and Mel Tillis and a couple other great country acts. And they just started the tradition. There was always sort of the, disbelief from the Nashville community that Detroit was a strong country market. They proved it wrong then, and we continue to prove it every year that what a strong country market. We've been as high as the number two country concert touring market in America in the last decade. And I think it's a credit to starting that tradition and then watching it spread to all the other venues, you know, with over 21 venues now doing country music. Maybe I'm even off on that. It could be more. But it's just incredible to see the fan base that was built and continues to be built and passed down through generations.
Okay. The hoedown did make a move. 2016 is when it came to Pine Knob. What was behind that? How did it wind up coming out to Pine Knob?
There were a lot of factors. I think the Sugarland stage disaster in Indianapolis, which ironically happened the same day as Hoedown that year prior, and the super high winds came through Hoedown. It was very dangerous. And, you know, safety first for our fans. And I think that had a lot to do with it, because the cost of doing Hoedown, the insurance, the amount of police, and everything regarding safety became pretty much unmanageable when we had 500,000 people down there at a time. And it just got to be so big that it was pretty much uncontrollable. And some of you will recall on this call that they had to shut down downtown Detroit and not allow people getting off the freeway exits. And, you know, basically our insurance company was like, this is uninsurable. We can't do it. And I was just very worried about fan safety. And, you know, don't want any tragedies happening at the venue. So we wanted to go to a safer event, and that's how it evolved. We went to Comerica Park for a few years. We tried it at Riverfront Park, and it worked well there, and actually at Comerica as well, but they built a parking garage in the space that we were doing it, and that's how it kind of ended up at Pine Knob.
Gary, for me, Hoedown at Hart Plaza in its prime was, you know, just to continue what Tim said, was unbelievable to look out. And as far as you could see, there was people. And it was crazy. And Tim is right. They had to shut the exits down. They would not allow any more people into the city. They would let them leave, but they blocked all the entrances getting into the city because it got to a safety concern. And I think that's when, you know, Tim and the rest of the management looked at things and said, listen, this is beyond everybody's control. It's so massive. But I will tell you, looking out over that stage was just, it's probably something I will never forget the rest of my life, to see that many people come down there. And one act I remember specifically was Aaron Lewis, not knowing how the crowd was going to take to him. It was his first, I guess, big concert coming out as a country artist. And he just went out with this steel guitar player, and he walked out and he looked at the crowd, and literally there's 500,000 people there. He lit a cigarette, took a few puffs, and then real calmly just started playing. And it was one of the coolest moments for me that, you know, out of all the hoedowns, that I'll never forget.
Yeah, and Aaron Lewis, of course, the lead singer of the hard rock band Staind. I'm not entirely sure that was a cigarette that he lit that night. I do know that I think the thing the city of Detroit hated about losing about having the hoedown move out of the city itself was the dependable bail money they used to get from Grunwald and Rob Stone here. Yeah. You know, that was a huge hit on the city budget. Wanted to go around and have everybody share their memories, because you, all of you, have been to so many hoedowns at this point. You've been on stage. You've contributed bail money to Independence Township as part of Hoedown. Holly Hutton, why don't we start with you and, you know, your favorite hoedown memory?
So I have one that I want all of us to talk about, which I think that was the most memorable for everyone. So I'll save that one. But the very first hoedown I did as a WYCD on-air staff member was in 2017, and it was my first interview with Rob. We had never, I don't think we had ever done an interview together before, and it was so joyful. It was with Midland. Do you remember this, Rob?
I don't.
Let me tell you. So it was with Midland, and you know these three guys, they're nuts. They're absolutely nuts, and they're unhinged, and they're just, they're a crazy interview. And I asked them, chipmunk character they all identified with, because there was three of them and the chipmunks are three. I don't know. It's a stupid question. But these guys all argued amongst themselves what character they most identify with. And Rob, who's a little bit more structured in his interviews, the panic look on your face gave me so much joy. And then I would just keep like throwing in a little blip or a blurb that would like restart their argument together. And it was so much fun for me. And like, they were, I feel like, the most fun on stage. They were amazing. But that interview, I absolutely loved it. I was like, ha-ha, like, this is a disaster, but like a good disaster. It was so fun.
I do remember this now. I think I blocked it out of my memory for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. But your face, you were like, well, I don't know what to do. And I was like, just let it happen.
Let them finish the interview by them. They
interviewed them.
They finished the interview by themselves, and we just sat back and watched.
Yeah, it was great. So that was like my first one, but can we all talk about Garth Brooks?
I mean, that's obviously, Garth is going to come up, and Rachel was the first one to raise her hand. So
when you ask, like I've been, 18 hoedowns now, the one that stands out, the moment I'll never, ever, ever forget was 2019, because we got to introduce Garth on stage, and we had billed it as a surprise guest. We didn't tell anybody in advance, you know, that Garth Brooks was going to be there.
But Rachel, and it's because none of us knew.
We didn't even know.
Tim kept it a secret. Do you remember all of us asking him?
Yeah, like, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I forgot about that we didn't know, but did we kind of know?
We kind of knew.
We would guess, and then Tim's poker face. We're like, is it? I mean, we were all guessing, like, everybody under the sun, and Tim would never, face wouldn't move. He wouldn't tell us. And it was just like, awful and fun.
I'll never forget saying, like, give it up for Garth Brooks. And the crowd just went crazy. It was just, the reaction was wild. And Garth, I mean, out of all the people I've ever met in this industry, I think he is just the nicest, most kindest, wonderful human being. And he came up to me and just gave me this bear hug. And a photographer got a picture of he and I hugging. It's just one of my favorite moments ever in my career in radio, was introducing him on stage at Hoedown that night. It was so cool. And the whole thing came to be, didn't he play Tim like the first one or something? And he said, if I ever make it big, like, I'll come back and play Hoedown again. There's a story behind why.
Well, we talked to him for many years, Gary, about will he ever come back? And every time we did an interview, and he said, well, maybe when my kids graduate high school, maybe when they're done, I'll come back and do it. And every time we interviewed him over the years, we would always ask him. And then finally he said, yeah, I'll come back. I'm going to come back and play it. But he didn't say when. So, you know, it was a long, long process for him to come back to do that.
Well, Tim, how did that come together? Did you have compromising pictures to finally bring Garth, you know, back to town? Or how did you put that together in 2019?
You know, I just kept reminding him that, you know, he had said that. I finally got him to say one time in an interview, and maybe Steve and Rachel will remember this, but he said, I'll do it when my kids get out of high school. So then I realized the 30th anniversary of him playing Hoedown on the third stage, which I'm often reminded of, was coming up. And I said, well, I called up his management. I go, this is the perfect opportunity. And they said, well, he could never do that because it'll blow his touring schedule and just create all kinds of problems. But if he could do it as a secret and not tell anybody, then he could surprise the crowd and it wouldn't affect any of that. And so we just teased it as a secret. I had to sign all kinds of NDA, non-disclosure agreement paperwork. And I stuck to my word. Only two people knew, Debbie Kenyon, our market manager, and me, and Garth's people. And we kept our word until literally 5 minutes before it was showtime. So I think Steve and Rachel finally figured it out at the very end there. And maybe Holly did too. I can't remember.
No, I was like, it couldn't. Like, I just thought it
I remember somebody possibly guessed it right before.
I think we had, I think it was Austin Burke, actually, Holly, who we had interviewed. And he was like, I think I saw him backstage or something. And we were like, no way. We didn't even believe it. We thought he was messing with us.
A prank. Like, we're like, Garth is going to be here. We're going to see him. I don't know. It was crazy. It was honestly, and I remember you guys going out too, Rachel, like, that was like the loudest crowd I have ever heard in my life. And it was just like, we were so excited. The energy was like through the roof. One of the greatest cons. And props to Tim for keeping it a secret. Like, because we were bombarding him for at least a good 6 months at who it might be. And he never cracked. And I'm sure we guessed Garth Brooks at some point, and he never showed it on his face. It was amazing.
People were buying tickets to a show not knowing that they were going to see Garth live, you know? And the crowd was just, like you said, the reaction, I've never heard anything like it since.
And then he played music for us.
Yeah.
Like, it was went through the hits.
The, hearing the audience sing along, you
the
know?
The problem with that, though, now is that every time you bill a show with
a secret guest,
surprise guest, everyone thinks it's going to be Garth. It's hard to top that.
If it's not Garth Brooks, we don't want it.
It seems to me the nice thing about Hoedown, too, is, okay, that's a moment that's going to be hard to top and maybe never top. But Hoedown itself, as what it's established itself as since, you know, 1983, you don't need that, do you? I mean, it's its own, just Hoedown as a name.
Yes, you know, and I will say that for me, the best part about Hoedown as the person booking the shows has been really banking on new artists that later come full circle. And, you know, the list is enormous with Toby Keith and the Chicks, Miranda Lambert, Lady A, Eric Church, Little Big Town, on and on. They were acts that I believed in. And my music director, Holly, and the other people. And we just collaborated on trying to bet on these acts that we thought were going to become superstars. And the crazy thing was our betting average was very good. As you can look at the massive list of artists that were there, there's so many great artists that played it on the third stage, as I'm always reminded. Rascal Flatts always Gary would say, hey, thanks for letting us play the third stage, Tim. It was his running joke, but then it was full circle when they came and headlined. And the same is true for Luke Bryan, who's headlining this year. So it's a full circle moment for these artists that, you know, remember that as the first gig they ever played, including Garth, and then to come back and be a superstar and see the love and everybody knowing all your songs. And, you know, and WYCD as a radio station gets a lot of credit for breaking so many new acts.
And with that, you know, Gary, one of my favorites, I remember standing there watching Thomas Rhett, you know, go out and play with you, Tim. And it was, you know, it was really, really cool to see that. But, you know, like Tim said, over the years, all these great people that have come through, you know, this year will be our 19th Hoedown, Rachel. Yeah. And like Rascal Flatts and some of those great memories. I remember taking some of the Lions players, and I don't know if you guys remember this. I know Tim does. And bringing them there when Rascal Flatts played the Hoedown. And then all of us going on Gary Lavox's bus and Gary giving the Lions players a big bottle of tequila, encouraging them to chug it. And then I'm trying to corral, you know, 300-pound linemen and get them out of there and get them back home safe. And they're texting me the next morning. They're at Lions practice still drunk. You know,
Now we know why they didn't do well that year, Grunwald.
That was the 0-16.
0-16.
Yeah. This is explaining a lot. Yeah.
it was around that.
We just talked up on the air last week. We were doing Secret Celebrity, and it was Kevin Costner. And I'll never forget the year Kevin Costner was at Hoedown.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
he played the stage. It was great.
So he's got this like country band. Now he never made it big like some of these other people did, but he played Hoedown with his band and he was real quiet and just kind of stood off to the side the whole time and didn't talk much, but like very good looking in person. And was that you? Bob Seger was there?
Yeah, too? A bunch of them came down. But Gary, you got to ask Tim about one of my favorite moments at Hoedown. Is when Willie Nelson's bus door opened and Tim was going to go get on the bus and the smoke, youth would have thought the bus was on fire and the smoke rolling out of Willie's bus and Tim going up on the bus and we didn't see him again for about an hour.
Now that actually was one of my favorite Hoedowns of all time. It was the Zac Brown Band, Willie Nelson, yeah. Kid Rock showed up and played. In fact, we still play the song. The collab song when they did Can't You See on the air. It was an incredible moment to just, it was like an MTV moment. I get on Willie's bus. It's me, Zac Brown, Willie Nelson, and Kid Rock. I'm like, this ought to be in a movie or something. And it was just a crazy moment for me. And the funny thing about it was after I came off the bus, I immediately got thrown out of my own Hoedown by a security guy. He goes, what are you doing standing here? I go, I was just talking to Willie Nelson 1 minute ago. He goes, you can't be around here. I go, this is my show. This is my show. I pay Willie Nelson. He's like, I don't care. Get the hell out of here. Or I'm going to have, get the police. I go, well, you understand that I have every credential. And after you throw me out, I'm just going to walk right back in. So he threw me out. And, we were in that backstage area by the Lincoln statue. And then I immediately walked back. And then I was like waving to the guy like 2 minutes later going, I'm back.
I think we should give Tim some props here, too, because he's probably the first person to come off of Willie Nelson's bus and have that much specific recall.
Yeah.
That he can go back to.
You know, and one more thing while we're talking about Tim, you know, his job over the years, Gary, I feel, and I know all of us can relate, but I don't think the public realizes how difficult it is to book all of these acts. And Holly knows a little bit as well, being the music director. But back in the day, it was a lot easier to get these artists than it is today. You know, when some of them are getting $2 to $3 million a show, it's really hard. You know, it was fun when the Hoedown was free. And then, you know, it eventually went to, $10, $15, $25 for tickets. And nowadays, it's really hard to bring all of that much talent in, you know, where really it would cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. And you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it costs 20 times minimal of what it used to cost just to produce the show.
Sure. Let's talk about this year. And obviously, Luke Bryan, it's going to be great. Two nights this year, which is nice. That starts to feel like when Hoedown was a full weekend downtown. So we've got Luke coming. He's obviously going to be a big deal. But who else should people, when they come this year, you know, from what you guys have been listening to, who should people make sure they get a chance to hear in the lineup? Rob, you want to jump in first?
Actually, if I wanted to tell my full circle moment.
Sure.
If I could, because you mentioned Kid Rock and Willie Nelson. I grew up here. I'm from, north of Detroit, Elmont, Romeo area, where Kid Rock is from. So I remember going down to the Hoedown since I was a kid. And when I started in radio and I started in YCD, I think it was in 2011, I was doing weekends part-time, just hoping that there was going to be a spot to open up for a full-time gig. And then coming into the 2012 Hoedown, I started filling in for Coop, who was doing nights at the time. And I had applied for this position. And I didn't know if I was going to get it or not, but I was working and I was at the hoedown. And the craziest moment to me, and thanks to Tim for this, was that Kid Rock showed up at that hoedown, and he had been a hero of mine being from the same town. And we were all, that's all we listened to growing up was Kid Rock. So he shows up, he sings a song with Miranda Lambert, and I'm backstage. And I remember Chuck Edwards was there going, just go talk to him. Just go up to him. And I was like, I can't. He's like my hero, my idol. I can't do it. He's like, just go. I'm waiting, I'm looking. And then I see Tim goes up and is talking to him. I go, all right, this is my chance. At least I have someone I can go up to and say, hey, I know this guy. I'm with this guy. So I went up, I put my arm around Tim and I said, hey, what's up, Bobby? And he goes, hey, what's up, man? Shook his hand. And then Tim goes, hey, this is Rob Stone. He's going to be our new nighttime personality. So in the same moment, I found out I'm getting my dream job in radio and I'm meeting one of my all-time idols. So that was just an epic full circle moment for me. And it's something that that I'll never forget.
That's a nice one. That's a very nice one. So, you know, back to this year's bill, Holly, you lead off. Who should we make sure we get to hear?
So there's a ton that are my favorite. It's hard to pick a favorite, but I think the one that I get, I don't know, like I'm most connected to would be the best is Hunter Girl. Her songs, I don't know what it is. They make me cry, but she's got all this new music out that is great for summer. Like they're like summer fun songs. So I think Hunter Girl is going to be the one that I think people want to come and watch Hunter Girl. Plus, you know, she was on American Idol, like she's amazing and she's the nicest person too. So
I think that
one I'm excited about.
I think that Hunter Girl is a little bit underrated, if you ask me. You know?
Really?
Don't you think she's underrated? Like people, like she's getting
she needs
to
get more attention.
Yeah.
She's undiscovered.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like we had a moment with her when she came to our studio in at Music Town. Ryan, you were there. I won't say anything. We all had tears in our eyes. I think Ryan just had like a piece of dirt in his eye or something. Like it was that. But like her performance just made me cry. And I'm like, now she's got these songs that'll make you cry, but then she's got these like summer jammy songs I think will be so much fun to hear live. So that's going to be my choice.
I was going to say Tyler Braden, you know, we talk about these artists that are newer artists and that someday, you know, work their way up from that third stage to that main stage. I think Tyler Braden is got one heck of a voice. And I think that he's going to be one of those guys that you see on the third stage or the second stage this year. And then a couple of years down the road, he's definitely going to be a main headliner.
Yeah. Rachel and I love Chase Matthew. We love Matt Spell
too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think those are people to watch as well. Wouldn't you agree, Tim?
Absolutely.
All right. So
which one? It's already had a number one record and Chase he's just electric. People just love him. He puts on just an incredible show. He kind of reminds me of Chris Jansen in his early days. Just this incredible show that you're not expecting. And they were like, whoa, what was that? The energy is so high.
And then John Moore got a song with Jason Aldean that's so good. And then Annie Bosco as well is like very sultry. You really, we got the sultry in there, I think. What? I think there's a little something for everybody.
I had some sexy in there.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. I was trying to be.
You can say
about
it.
Yeah.
you all make your way around the venue pretty well, you know, during these hoedowns. What have been some of the craziest listener or fan interactions you've had?
I think for me and Tim can relate to this and Rachel as well, going back to Hart Plaza.
Oh my gosh.
I think that was when you would literally see about everything you could see in the city of Detroit. But I love the fact, Gary, that it brought everybody together, even people that, you know, because it was free, didn't get to experience a lot of country music and maybe find out what it's all about. And I really do think that we led the country with this. You know, where else could you get this? And Tim, wasn't it the biggest free country music festival in the world?
It absolutely was. And no one believed me when I would tell them that. And I even had pictures, you know, aerial pictures. I'm like, this is what it looks like. And then they were like, whoa, what? And I'm like, I've been telling you for 20 years that this is the biggest festival in America. Nobody believed me, but it was a fact.
One of the great memories from the from 1983, again, when nobody knew what this thing would be, was I was walking, I had parked and I was walking from basically close to where Comerica Park is now. And you could hear them playing clear as the day, loud, all the way up to there, because they had the stage facing, you know, from the river back to the river, and then facing out to the rest of the city. And that, of course, changed, you know, very quickly. But I think that was almost, I almost felt like that was the deliberate way to tell Detroit country music had arrived in downtown Detroit.
It was a vibe. I remember carrying my backpack around and I had a giant bottle of vodka in it, Gary.
You?
And Rachel and I would go around
to the lemonade vendors
and make vodka lemonades. The artists loved it. I had a mobile bar in my backpack, and the listeners who knew that would listen to us over the years knew I had vodka in my backpack. And literally we would make drinks and have drinks with the listeners.
And the biggest one was Linda Lee, though.
Yeah.
She would show up with coolers and coolers and made us look at like amateurs.
So when, you know, like the Friday morning or whatever of a hoedown, do you lay staff bets on who's most likely to be carted out in a police car?
We took it serious too, because this was our biggest event of the year. So, you know, we had a good time, but we didn't let it get out of hand, because it was, you know, it was fun. And thinking back over the years, you know, Josh Grayson coming out, you know, a local guy coming out
from the back of the crowd and working his way all the way through the middle of the crowd up to the stage.
You know, it was just something I will never forget and remember the rest of my life, because I don't think we will ever see something like that of that magnitude anywhere ever again. You know, it just would be millions and millions and millions of dollars to put something like that on again, you know?
It really did take a physical toll, too, I'll tell you, Gary. Friday morning, you were going, here we go, are you ready? It was like preparing for battle, because you knew you had three 20-hour days coming up, and it was a lot of work.
You know,
we had to keep it together.
Gary, one more quick favorite moment of mine, and Tim and I worked on this. I had tried for years and years to get fighter jets to come over for the national anthem. And I worked so hard on this. And every year I would tell Tim, I'm going to do it. Solfridge wouldn't do it. We couldn't get anybody to do it. And I contacted a base in Texas and they brought up, and I finally got it approved. How I did this, I have no idea. I got them to fly these fighter jets up from Texas and coordinated it. And we had them do a flyover for the national anthem. And they flew over downtown Hoedown and over the river. And it was perfect. It was one of the best moments of my life to have these fighter jets come over in formation. And then those fighter pilots hung out and left their jets at Solfridge and hung out at Hoedown all weekend. And when they went back to Texas, they sent me an autographed picture of them flying over the mountains. And it was beautiful, of all the F-16s. And it had one of their patches in there. And I still speak to the colonel to this day from Texas. And he wrote to Grunwald, thanks for the hospitality at Hoedown and the, in parentheses, killer lemonade. and they had the best time ever. But that was one of my best memories of Hoedown, is those fighter jets coming over as the anthem right along the river. It was so cool. Such a great moment.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Steve. I was going to really talk about that as being almost my number one moment of all time. It was we had to coordinate with them. I got on the phone with the colonel and he was like, what time do you want us to be over Hoedown? He goes, I go, 6 o'clock. He goes, now, Tim, when you say 6 o'clock, I don't, it's not going to be 6 o'clock and 05 seconds or 5:59:50. It's going to be 6 o'clock exactly.
To the second.
So I asked Karen Newman, who sang the national anthem beautifully, by the way. And I said, how long does it take you to sing the national anthem? So it was like 2 minutes and 33 seconds or something. So Dr. Don, Rachel and Grunwald were emceeing the stage at that moment. And I told those guys, I go, when I give you the signal, you know, that's when you got to bring out Karen and she's got to knock it out. It's got to be perfect. So literally I'm sitting there with my digital watch and going, okay, go, you know, bring her out. She starts singing and she got to the land of the free and I'm not seeing anything. And I'm going, oh, this is not going to work. And then she says, and the home, still nothing of the, and nothing. And all of a sudden I see these specks down by Lake St. Clair. And when she hit the notes on Brave, those jets were right dead overhead. It couldn't have been more perfect. I had tears in my eyes and Karen was crying and it was like magic beyond. It was like the ultimate moment to be an American at Hoedown in downtown Detroit with the building shaking and the F-16s flying overhead. It was so insane.
It was really cool. Then I had some friends out on the water that weekend and those F-16s buzzed all the boats on Lake St. Clair. It was really cool.
I love that they stayed and partied for all the weekend. That is perfect. Like
they
left
their fighter jets at Salfridge. Like, they got a ride down. That was cool.
We parked the fighter jets. We'll be on down to Hoedown.
And I was like, whatever these guys want, all the beer, food, whatever they want, they get it.
Well, they clearly had the X-ray technology in their jets and they saw into Grunwald's backpack. So they knew what a good time it was going to be. Listen, everybody, this has been great. I think we've loaded everybody up for two big days of Hoedown coming up on Friday the 28th and Saturday the 29th out at Pine Knob, where Hoedown has been since 2016. I want to thank Tim Roberts, Steve, Rachel, Holly, Rob for being here, sharing your memories. They'll be out at Hoedown too. If Grunwald has a backpack on, you want to be his, you want to be his best friend that day.
Gary, I got a solo cup for you too.
I will be taking you up on that, even if I don't bring. I kind of have a like one of the big solo containers beyond a cup. But thank you all for being here. Thank everybody for listening to this episode of Hello Pine Knob. I'm your host, Gary Graff. And we'll see you out on the lawn.